Chapter 10. The Duke and Duchess. 4 days after these curious incidents, a funeral started from Canterville at about 11 o'clock at night. The funeral cart was drawn by 8 black horses, each of which carried on its head a bunch of flowers. The coffin was covered by a deep purple cloth, on which was embroidered in gold the Canterville coat of arms. The servants walked beside the horses and cart with lighted candles. The whole funeral was wonderfully impressive. Lord Canterville was the chief mourner, having come up specially from Wales to attend the funeral. He sat in the first cart along with young Virginia. Then came the minister and his wife, then Washington and the 3 boys, and in the last cart was Mrs. Umney. It was generally felt that, as she had been frightened by the ghost for more than 50 years of her life, she had a right to see the last of him. A deep grave had been dug in the corner of the churchyard. It was just under a big, beautiful old tree, and the service was read in the most impressive manner by the Reverend Augustus Dampier. When the funeral was over, the servants put their candles out. This was an old custom observed in the Canterville family, and as the coffin was being lowered into the grave, Virginia stepped forward. She laid on it a large cross made of white and pink almond flowers. As she did so, the moon came out from behind a cloud and flooded the little churchyard with its silent silver light, and from a distant hill, a bird began to sing. She thought of the ghost's description of the Garden of Death. Her eyes filled with tears, and she hardly spoke a word during the drive home. The next morning, before Lord Canterville went up to town, Mr. Otis met with him. They talked about the jewels the ghost had given to Virginia. They were amazing, especially a certain ruby necklace, and their value was so great that Mr. Otis worried about allowing his daughter to accept them. "My lord," he said, "it is quite clear to me that these jewels belong to your family. I must beg you, accordingly, to take them to London with you, and to regard them simply as a portion of your property which has been restored to you under certain strange conditions. As for my daughter, she is merely a child. She has, as yet, I am glad to say, little interest in such jewels. I am also informed by Mrs. Otis that these jewels are worth a lot of money and, if offered for sale, would fetch a tall price. Under these circumstances, Lord Canterville, I feel sure that you will recognize how impossible it would be for me to allow them to remain in the possession of any member of my family. Perhaps I should mention that Virginia is very anxious that you should allow her to retain the box. She would like to keep it as a reminder of the ghost. As it is extremely old and worn, you may perhaps allow her that. For my own part, I confess I am a good deal surprised to find a child of mine expressing sympathy with ghosts in any form. I can only account for it by the fact that Virginia was born in one of your London suburbs shortly after Mrs. Otis had returned from a trip to Athens." Lord Canterville listened very quietly to the minister, pulling his gray mustache now and then to hide a smile. When Mr. Otis had finished, he shook his hand and said, "My dear sir, your charming little daughter helped my unlucky ancestor, Sir Simon, in a very important way. My family and I owe her for what she did. The jewels are clearly hers. Besides, I believe that if I were mean enough to take them from her, the old fellow would be out of his grave and ready to haunt me again in an instant. I assure you, I have no more claim on them than one of your servants. And when Miss Virginia grows up, I dare say she will be pleased to have pretty things to wear. Besides, you forget, Mr. Otis, that you took the furniture and the ghost when you bought the house. So anything that belonged to the ghost passed at once into your possession. In the eyes of the law, Sir Simon was dead and you acquired his property by purchase." Mr. Otis was a good deal upset at Lord Canterville's refusal. He begged him to reconsider his decision. But the good man had made his decision. In the end, he convinced the minister to allow his daughter to retain the present the ghost had given her. And when, in the spring of 1890, the young Duchess of Cheshire was presented to the Queen on the occasion of her marriage, her jewels were the universal theme of admiration, because, of course, sweet Virginia had married her admirer, the Duke of Cheshire, as soon as he came of age. They were both so charming, and they loved each other so much, that everyone was delighted at the match. Well, everyone except the old Marchioness of Dumbleton, who had tried to catch the Duke for one of her 7 unmarried daughters. And, strange to say, Mr. Otis himself was not delighted at first either. Mr. Otis liked the young Duke personally, but he objected to titles and was worried about his daughter. His objections, however, were completely overruled, and when he walked up the aisle of St. George's, Hanover Square, with his daughter on his arm, there was not a prouder man in all of England. The Duke and Duchess, after the honeymoon was over, went down to Canterville, and on the day after their arrival, they walked over in the afternoon to the lonely churchyard by the woods. There had been a great deal of difficulty at first about what to write on Sir Simon Stone, but finally it had been decided to simply put the initials of the old gentleman's name and the verse from the library window. The Duchess had brought with her some lovely flowers, which she put next to the grave. After they stood by it for some time, they walked into the ruined old church. There the Duchess sat down on a large stone, while her husband lay at her feet smoking a cigarette and looking up at her beautiful eyes. Suddenly, he threw his cigarette away, took hold of her hand, and said to her, "Virginia, a wife should have no secrets from her husband." "Dear Cecil, I have no secrets from you." "Yes, you have," he answered, smiling. "You have never told me what happened to you when you were locked up with the ghost." "I have never told anyone, Cecil," said Virginia seriously. "I know that, but you should tell me." "Please don't ask me, Cecil. I cannot tell you. Poor Sir Simon. I owe him a great deal. Yes, don't laugh, Cecil. I really do. He made me see what life is and what death means. And, most importantly, why love is stronger than both." The Duke rose and kissed his wife lovingly. "You can have your secret as long as I have your heart," he whispered. "You have always had that, Cecil." "And you will tell our children someday, won't you?" Virginia blushed.